in this reel of Seawall Movies, it's another very special episode as the boys talk about the Dark Knight trilogy. They kick off with the original Nolanverse creation, Batman Begins, and move on to what they feel is the gem of the series, The Dark Knight. In theaters, of course, they review the conclusion of the triumvirate, The Dark Knight Rises. In trailer news, they look at the, spoiler alert, utterly forgettable preview of The Expendables 2. In brief movie news, they bring up Jon Favreau's partnership with Pixar and Peter Jackson's attempt at making The Hobbit into a trilogy. It's the 115th reel of COO Movies.
Fear. Chaos. Pain.
Greetings, program!
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
I'm gonna make him an offer again.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
Go ahead. Make my day.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
Welcome to brand spanking new reel of Seawall Movies. My name is Jeff. I would like to introduce my dark co-hosts, Ray and Steve. How are you guys doing?
I'm great.
Yes.
We're doing fine.
You have to talk like you're behind a mask.
Okay.
But the thing is, he didn't sound like he was behind the mask. He sounded like
he was really amplified talking directly into a microphone.
He sounded like he was in lots of reverb. He sounded like Captain Picard. Make it so, number one.
I will tell you something. I think there was a lot of RDR in that movie. What? But we'll talk about that a little bit later.
What's RDR?
Anyway, let's go into the news.
You on the mark!
Working with Pixar on Magic Kingdom.
Yep. So we heard a while back, we talked about Mr. Favreau's new project, Magic Kingdom, which is supposed to be some sort of family adventure in which a family enters the Magic, like an alternate reality version of the Magic Kingdom theme park in California. Don't really know much beyond that. But the weird thing is he's like working with Pixar on this, and then they're trying to approach making it like they would an animated film. So they're like trying to have everything about the story done and like zipped up before they start shooting. So he said that they're like working on the script, and they go up and they meet with Pixar and they talk with them about it. And then they get like art directing people and all that involved. And then they bring people back with them, and then they go back to Pixar and they go over more stuff. And so it's kind of weird. I'm guessing Pixar is involved because obviously the Magic Kingdom is a Disney property, and I don't know if he was like looking forward to like, hey, I want to bring Pixar in on this, or it was just sort of assumed. I don't know, but it's just sort of weird that he's working with a completely different studio to help make this movie. So I just thought it was kind of weird and funny.
I mean, it is a Walt Disney Pictures movie.
Right.
So, and also, I would think that if he's going to bring some of the, you know, essentially animated characters into the real world, because isn't it supposed to be an animated, isn't it supposed to be a live action film?
It is a live action film.
Mm-hmm. So, if he brings them into the real world, he may want it to be basically along the lines of Roger Rabbit, except, well, not hand drawn animation. They want to try to go 3D or something. So, that's where Pixar comes in.
There's been no mention of any sort of animated people being in the movie at all, or 3D animated people, as the case may be. So maybe he's just going for a certain sort of creative touch that he knows Pixar can pull off, you know? So I just thought it was sort of a strange thing to go to. It's sort of, it's like, hey, this, you know, this company is distributing my movie and financing it, and I'm going to go talk to like one of their own studios to make this movie. You know, it's just sort of weird to me.
No. Doesn't seem weird to me. But that's just me. Anyways. Right. So moving on. Yep. Peter Jackson planned a third Hobbit movie? Wait a minute.
Yep.
Is he making
it's not so much that he's planning it. Okay, I guess they're gonna go. They're going to be going to shoot more footage, supposedly. Now, I don't know if this is like for an extended edition DVD or what, but there's so much stuff that they want to shoot that the studio's like, you know, why don't you just make another movie? And I'm like, really? This, the Hobbit we're talking about, this was not some epic novel. You know, I mean, I don't know if either of y'all have read The Hobbit.
Because it's it's been a
long time. It's
a kid's story, right?
Yeah, it's not that big of a story.
It was short. Really.
Yeah.
Nothing so compared to Lord of the Rings.
So I don't know how, like, really, I mean, I was really shocked when they said, oh, we're making, well, not really shocked, but kind of like when they were going the two movie route. And then I was just like, now that they're like, oh, we might make it into three movies. I was like, really? So I wonder if that means they're going to, like, pull some stuff out of the second one and sort of move it over to the third one. Like, kind of do like a rearrange, like, hey, we're gonna add some stuff to the second one but pull some stuff out and put it in the third one, make third one longer. I don't know, it's just, I know it's Peter Jackson and I know he's a huge fan of the Tolkienverse, so I don't know, maybe he's just really, really wanting to make sure he films every possible thing that he can out of that book.
I mean, he's doing
every scenario he could. Yeah. He's going to be making stuff up.
I mean, he's doing it with his partners, Fran and Philippa, so.
Yeah.
And they did a pretty good job on the first ones, on the Lord of the Rings, so. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, but if he would have gone this route with the Lord of the Rings, it would have been like 9 movies.
Yeah, but we would also have this long section with Tom Bombadil, which has nothing to do with the story. It's like a part of their adventure, but it's no progression in the story. Once they're done with him, they move on. And then the story actually starts progressing.
I don't know. I just I was like, really? Another movie?
Oh. Slow news week, huh?
Mm-hmm.
No, I just didn't want to add a lot because I thought we were going to be talking about, you know.
Oh, because we got a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
So, with that, let's go into the past.
You're telling me that you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
Batman Begins. 85% fresh, 90% audience. The Dark Knight. Rotten Tomatoes rating 94% fresh, 96% audience. Both of them directed by Christopher Nolan. Starring Christian Bale, Michael Caine, Gary Oldman, Liam Neeson, Morgan Freeman, Katie Holmes, Maggie Gyllenhaal, Aaron Eckhart, and Heath Ledger. Yes. Not always the same in some of those films. The first three at least stay consistent.
Yeah, we'll let you figure it out. You're smart people. Figure it out.
Again, shit ton load of trivia, so we'll give you the links. You go ahead and read it yourself.
Yeah, there's like over 300 items, so have fun with that. I actually did. I did read some of it, and I did put one into our title, which is the main themes of the movies, supposedly. So. Batman Begins. Mr. Nolan has said that the theme of Batman Begins is fear. The theme of the Dark Knight is chaos.
And Joker talks about that a bit.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to incorporate that one trivia item into the title there. You know, the one thing that always comes to mind with the Batman Begins is I remember when they announced that they were making another Batman movie and sort of relaunching the franchise. And much like I did with Spider-Man, it was kind of a, really?
Yeah.
But it was kind of one of those things where it's like after having to suffer through the last couple Batman movies.
I have to say, I really like Batman Forever. I'm a fan of Batman Forever, so I'm okay with that one.
Yeah,
Batman and Robin, where it went all to hell.
Yeah, Batman and Robin goes down as one of those few movies that I've ever like wanted to walk out of. Only reason I didn't is because I saw it in Georgia, and it was like 109 degrees outside, and it was nice and air conditioned in the theater. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just gonna sit here and not sort of watch this movie and just chill out. So, that was my last Batman experience, really. Yeah, when they announced this one, I was just kind of like, ugh, I don't think we really need any more Batman movies. Yeah. But I will say that I am glad that they made them again. You know, again, you know, and I remember watching when I watched this first one, and I don't know, maybe you guys were on this when I first saw this movie, and I don't even think I saw this in the theater. I think I waited until it was out on video before I watched it. I really wasn't. I wasn't really expecting at the end of it that this was going to turn into a trilogy. And I, at that time, I don't know if he had announced it was going to be a trilogy, if they knew that far ahead.
I don't think they even said anything about it being like an actual trilogy. They were we're going to make another movie. Mm-hmm. Then The Dark Knight came out, and then they're like, we're going to make another movie. And you know what? No, that's the last one we're going to do for this. So it's essentially a trilogy. So I think this was more of it ended up being a trilogy than necessarily an intent for a trilogy. I could be wrong.
Right. But if that's the case, I guess Mr. Nolan and his brother did a much better job of sort of expanding it into a trilogy than, say, like, you know, the most famous example I can think of is Star Wars, how he made the first movie not knowing that he would ever be able to make any more. So he sort of changed things around so that the first movie sort of made sense without all the backstory and all the stuff in it. And then he had to sort of backpedal and sort of shoehorn some things into the next couple of movies so that it all kind of makes sense. I never got that feeling from watching these movies that, you know, they had to change anything per se.
Well, and I think it's more of, if anything, as they were going between movie and movie, it's each movie in and of itself is a self-contained story. So for all intents and purposes, they could have released the movie The Dark Knight without having to ever make it.
I don't agree
with that anymore.
With the Dark Knight Rises, but yeah, we're not talking about these two.
Yeah, these two, correct.
Yeah, these two can be really are very much intentional stories, and because he created these two and was like, "Hey, let's do the third one. Let's connect it to the other two previously," then that's fine, sure. But that's when they made the decision. Hey, it's a trilogy, and here's the last part of the story. Mm-hmm. But the other two, in and of itself. They could have never made Batman Begins or The Dark Knight Rises and just released The Dark Knight and would have been fine. No one would have complained about anything.
Right.
I'd agree with that.
You know, and I just watched I just watched these two again today. It had been a while since I watched them when I first got out my new home theater stuff, but the one thing that sort of bothered me today that had never really bothered me before is the whole thing about the microwave emitter. Okay. So I'm no particle physicist, but the way I understand the microwaves work is that they cause water molecules to vibrate.
Uh-huh.
Right? And it's the friction and heat from that vibration that cooks your food or, you know, makes things. So that's why if you put something in the microwave that has like no water content in it, it won't actually get very hot because there's nothing for it to vibrate.
Mm-hmm.
So thinking in terms of like people are 70% water.
Yeah.
Why were people not exploding? As the train was going down the main street.
Essentially, you know? How did it target just the water mains and not the people?
Or not everything else with water in it.
Right. Fruit. And all kinds of stuff for Sonic.
This is where unfortunately they throw in. Yeah, we know. It's just a suspension of disbelief. There's a specific thing they created to make sure that it only targets this and doesn't affect anything else. Just say.
Which isn't so bad for a movie. I mean, it's really the only really huge thing I think that I was sort of like, wait a second. Something doesn't make sense here.
Yeah, I was actually, when I was doing my repeat viewing on Monday for this, I was thinking the exact same thing. I was like, if it's a microwave emitter, it's emitting microwaves all over the place. So wouldn't everybody explode?
Yeah, and they could have explained it. I think they could have explained it fairly easily if they would have said, hey, it's a highly accurate, you know, targetable microwave device, you know what I mean? Like, if they had just said that, then you're just like, okay, they can aim it, you know, and affect a certain area.
Although I think Yeah, it feels like though the way the device was worked was it really was it was almost like a microwave emitting bomb sort of thing.
Right.
Because it only worked in proximity, because otherwise it would be like, okay, you want to blow up the entire water mains, why don't you have it over there in the Narrows, point it at Wayne Tower and target Wayne Tower and shoot.
Yeah. Why start so far away from your main target, really?
And why were you driving on a train, making the water mains explode as you go? Mm-hmm. Why not just shoot the one thing, blow everything to bits, and release the fear toxin? But, yeah.
Well, so that was my main issue, I think, watching it again. I actually... when I first saw it the first time, I think I liked it, but I wasn't blown away by it. Like, it wasn't like, oh, my God, this is awesome. It was an interesting take on Batman because it was obviously more realistic.
Mm-hmm.
I think I sort of blew it off until after I watched The Dark Knight. And I don't remember, like, I remember the movie coming out. I remember Batman Begins coming out and it being popular, obviously, because it's a Batman movie and it was getting good reviews. But there was no sort of like, I don't remember there being like a Batman sort of hysteria. Like it, I don't remember theaters being crowded or, you know, or hearing about theaters being crowded for screenings.
No, I don't remember that either.
Yeah, I think they were.
I remember. I think people were gun shy.
Right.
And I think we're going to see the same thing with Superman.
Yeah.
After the last Superman. That, you know, it's not everybody's going to be like, oh, awesome. Yay. I don't think we even really saw it with Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely not with Spider-Man. But the thing with Man of Steel, though, is Christopher Nolan and Zack Snyder are involved.
Mm-hmm.
And after already seeing The Dark Knight and all the and The Dark Knight Rises and Batman Begins, you know, the Dark Knight trilogy that Nolan put out. And we've already seen Watchmen in 300. That right. People are going to be like, okay, well, we would love to see. Honestly, I think people want to see a Superman movie. They just want it good. They just haven't trusted anybody because the last few times there have been a Superman movie, they were crap. Although I personally think that Superman Returns wasn't that bad.
No, it wasn't that bad, but I think it was overhyped. I think everybody was expecting it to be amazing, you know, because it was like this modern take. I remember when I went to see Superman, and I don't want to get too far off into Superman, but I just remember when I saw Superman Returns and when the credits started and it was playing like the same theme from the first Superman movie. I mean, I got goosebumps because mm-hmm. Superman's like one of the movies, like the first movies I saw in the theater and remember as a child. So it brought back a lot of memories. So I think that was part of the things like, oh my God, this is going to be amazing. A modern Superman movie after, you know, and it just sort of was like, eh, it's okay. You know, like, I think we didn't get the movie we were expecting.
Okay, but everybody should know, because and all three of us should have seen the teaser for Man of Steel before The Dark Knight Rises, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me you didn't get goosebumps just watching that.
No goosebumps.
Okay.
With
Russell Crowe's voice?
Yeah.
With the trailer? I mean, anyways, that's probably a conversation for another time.
Yes.
Back to...
I don't want to waste any time with talking about that when we could be talking about The Dark Knight, which I will say right now is still my favorite.
You're going along the lines of the whole everybody thinks that Empire Strikes Back is the best of the original Star Wars trilogy type thing, right?
I don't think everybody
The middle one is the best.
I don't think everybody thinks that. There was a long time.
No, I don't think everybody thinks that either. Because I don't think that. I think Return of the Jedi was better, but that's just me.
Mm-hmm.
But the long lines that the middle one ended up being, basically, for all intents and purposes, that's the climax part.
Right. I understand. And I kind of think because my feelings completely changed. With, you know, and again, I hate talking about other movies except the ones we're supposed to be talking about. But looking at The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi with adult eyes,
mm-hmm.
I like Empire Strikes Back much more than Return of the Jedi. To me, Return of the Jedi was a much more sort of kid-friendly sort of adventure romp. I feel the themes in The Empire Strikes Back were much more adult.
It was also a darker movie.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, I think the themes in both of, you know, this, The Dark Knight and Dark Knight Rises are pretty adult. You know, they're both pretty dark movies. What I love about The Dark Knight to me is that, okay, if you're a fan of super, and I'm kind of giving away sort of my recommendation here, but if you're a fan of superhero movies, obviously, and you're, especially if you're a fan of Batman, Dark Knight's a great movie. It's awesome. It's got a great story, you know, lots of cool action and stuff. But to me, like, The Dark Knight is the kind of movie that kind of transcends the superhero thing. Like, you could take somebody who doesn't like superhero movies and say, here, watch this movie. It's an awesome crime drama.
I could agree with that. True.
And it just happens to have Batman in it, too. You know, that, that makes it kind of cooler.
Uh-huh.
You know, so for me, that's always been the thing about The Dark Knight. It was like, this is a really awesome, if you were to pull the Batman character out and sort of replace him with somebody else, it would have still been an awesome crime drama. You know? From the second that movie came on the screen and you saw that heist in the beginning, I was like, all right, I'm hooked. Because it goes, immediately goes places you're not really expecting, and it's really well done. You know? So for me, that was like the draw for The Dark Knight. Like, Batman aside, it makes an awesome Batman movie, but I think it makes an awesome not Batman movie too.
Mm-hmm. I can totally see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. The focus was a lot more on Harvey Dent, I think.
Which really makes sense because honestly, in the spans of the trilogy, that's really what this movie contributed to the overall story. This second movie, Harvey Dent and his story and his fall and people taking the blame for what happened and sort of keeping him as the hero is totally what sets up number three. You know?
Mm-hmm. Even though it's 8 years later, but...
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those things where when you like a movie so much, there's hard to really discuss things about it. If that makes any sense.
Well, okay. Well, I can say this. I'm not a fan particularly of Batman.
Right.
You know, I'm more of a looking forward to a Justice League and I like the X-Men and those kinds of things. So, you know, I don't know so much about the Avengers, which I've learned about clearly. And then Batman, the things I know about Batman, I would never think to go where Nolan did.
Mm.
Now, I'll say this. The first movie for me was clearly an origin story. Okay, so we finally got the two-hour origin story of Batman. Mm. All right. I get it. I thought it was kind of cool. It was cool. It was interesting. It was a different take on anything that I had thought about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was enjoyable, albeit drawn out, okay, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
The Dark Knight, for me, was just kind of, all right, now we know who this dude is, and now we've got this crazy person out there who wants to destroy him and wants to grab anybody he can along the way to help him with that quest,
mm-hmm.
okay? And I found that really intriguing. I'm like, okay, now we know who Batman is. It's all there. Now we need to see how he functions.
Right.
You know, in this crazy world. Is he going to survive it now that we know that he's, you know, not a superhuman, not anything like that, just incredibly intelligent and athletic.
Mm-hmm.
With a lot of help, you know?
Right.
And so I find that really, I did find The Dark Knight clearly is my favorite of the three. Okay. And I say that as someone who's not a typical viewer of Batman, you know, and mm-hmm. doesn't really live in the lore of Batman. Mm-hmm. So I can definitely say that it was, you know, both of them were a success for me. And again, the funny part was my brother and I went to go see the trilogy, mm-hmm. In the same night, because I had not seen The Dark Knight prior to that night. And my brother had not seen Batman Begins. So it was odd. So when we went to see it, you know, he saw the first one and he was kind of like, okay, I see, you know, right. Okay, I get it now. And then as I saw The Dark Knight and I was like, oh my God, that was good. And he's like, I know, right? You know, and he's like, you know, kind of like, so, you know, and we were kind of doing that because the longest break was, we had like a 45-minute break before they could show the new one. And so we were sitting there talking about it and stuff. And he's like, I could have dealt with not seeing the first one. You know, yeah. That's what he kind of said. And I'm like, you're right. I agree with you on that. I said, but I thought it was interesting because I like the martial arts and all that kind of stuff. And you really get a taste of that in the first movie.
Is this kind of showing the possible or the should be death of the origin story? Because a lot of people know the basic origin of the superheroes. Like we just had another origin story of Spider-Man.
Right.
We could have totally done without an origin story. I could have totally done it just because we have a new person in the mask. I mean, you don't see James Bond having an origin story over and over
every time.
Yeah, every time exactly. They switch actors. So why not just jump right in? Maybe even if it's something like in this case with Spider-Man, they switch to mechanical web shooters instead of organic. So, but I think most people would forgive that transition. Okay, this is a slightly different Spider-Man, but he had the same thing. Got bitten by a radioactive spider. Now he has spider powers.
If he good for him. If he was truly mutated by a radioactive spider shooting web organically, we all know it'd be coming out of his ass.
Right. Or his mouth.
Right.
But you're right.
But it's interesting that you say that because, yes, I believe if you don't watch the first one, people are familiar enough with the character that they can sort of fill in the blanks. Like, you know, we understand that, you know, his parents died and, you know, he's all bent out of shape about it. You know, you could sort of fill in the rest of it and go, okay, he either trained himself really long or he went and got trained, but you know, that really can be filled in by your imagination, where you really, in the terms of this trilogy, where you would lose out not watching the first one is that you really won't understand
the third one,
the connections. Yeah. When the third one starts coming, you would have been like, what? What are they talking about? Who's this person?
Yeah. Well, I will say, though, that the one thing that I definitely get with this Nolan character, with the Nolan Batman, is the whole aspect of the Dark Knight.
Right.
I don't think we got that with the previous I would say incantations, but I'm like, that's the wrong word.
Incarnation.
Incarnations. Thank you. The previous incarnations. I don't know that we necessarily got the darkness of the character.
I think we felt like we were because our previous Batman before the Tim Burton one was the, you know, the TV show in the 1960s movie where it was all Dayglow and.
Right.
You know. Right. So I think he felt darker because the actual tone of the movie was. You know, the cinematography and everything was darker.
Right. And I agree with that. But I still didn't get the darkness of the story. Do you know, like, why did he become the Dark Knight? Where does the Dark Knight come from?
Yes, Michael Keaton wasn't as damaged. It didn't
seem. Right, exactly. Exactly. And so when it came to this one, like, you got that, you know, like, he felt it was his fault his parents died. Okay. Right. So that's why he was going there. You know, then in the second movie, it's like he felt it was his fault that the Joker was targeting the city. And it was his fault that Harvey Dent, you know, got hurt and turned into Two-Face and all that stuff. You know,
the copycats, they were getting killed because of him.
Right, exactly. So you get where he's putting all this weight on his shoulder. You finally get... I will give Nolan credit for really being able to show, you know, like this is why the Dark Knight is the appropriate moniker for the Batman.
Right.
So I'll give him that much.
Yeah. And I can't go without talking about this movie without saying because I think he's absolutely mesmerizing, is I think Heath Ledger was awesome. I mean,
absolutely.
It's probably my favorite take on this character out of his entire history. Video games, television shows, movies. Just because he seemed like he could exist. Like a person that screwed up, but not over the top screwed up, like not, you know, not the Burgess Meredith
right.
or the Jack Nicholson sort of, you know,
he wasn't screwed dropped, up. He wasn't dropped in a vat of something that transformed him into the Joker.
Oh, how right.
in fact,
know?
We don't. In fact, we don't know what caused him to be that way. He, you know, and that's one of the great things I love about it is that, you know, he tells, I think, three times.
Yeah,
you know how I got these scars.
Yeah.
You know, and every time it's a completely different story. So it's like everything about him is a complete mystery, where he came from, who he is, you know. So it's one of those things where his motivation is just seems to be like, hey, I just want to see things. I just want to see the city burn, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Which kind of makes him even scarier.
True.
He's not doing it for money. He's just doing it just because he can.
And I think that whole scene of I'm taking over and mm-hmm. one of you is going to join me. The rest of you are going to die. So who wants to join me?
Right.
You know, and they're like, you know, kind of thing. It's like,
we only have room for one more. So we're going to have to hold auditions.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
He is a completely
charismatic villain, even though he's completely nuts and scary. Like I can totally understand why people would sort of be like, I'm going to be with this guy because I don't want to be someone that he doesn't like. Like I'm going to do.
Yeah,
what
I don't
want to
be against him. Exactly. Right.
Yeah, but you kind of don't want to be with him because he's one of those guys who's like, hey, thanks for helping me.
Right.
You're dead.
Yeah.
But you just kind of want to stay away.
And then, I just have to bring it up because it is a comparison because it was a character change.
Uh-huh.
Katie Holmes or Maggie Gyllenhaal?
I was much more of a
Katie Holmes fan.
That's a tough one.
Yeah, I mean,
I think I would go with Katie Holmes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really think I had that much of a preference, honestly.
Yeah.
Same here.
I could just tell a huge difference in the characters. Maybe it was because I was watching them back to back like that.
Mm-hmm.
Was Katie Holmes came off as the DA, you know, assistant DA kind of thing for me. Whereas Maggie brought this more of a socialite kind of thing to a character. And even the way that they stood, like Katie Holmes always stood kind of very straight up and down, and then Maggie Gyllenhaal always stood really sexy, like curvy and sexy.
She reminded me of Kirsten Dunst in the original Spider-Man movies.
Yeah, I can agree with that. But it was something about Katie Holmes that made me, I mean, believe it or not, I can't believe I'm saying, like, oh my God, I preferred Katie Holmes because she's usually so wooden. But mm-hmm. I think that character was so wooden because it actually worked to counterbalance the, like, crazy Dark Knight.
Well, I was going to say, do you think it's more has to do with maybe the chemistry between the two characters of why you prefer one or the other?
Could be.
Yeah. Could be. Yeah, because that totally is a factor. I mean, if you feel two characters work better on screen, then, you know.
I think Maggie Gyllenhaal version of that character was kind of like, fine, you didn't move fast enough. I'm moved on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, whereas the Katie Holmes version would have been like, Bruce, we had this discussion, you know, like, if you weren't going to make, I have to do something with my life. You know, like, I feel like there would have been more tension about.
Plus I love that double slap.
Yeah.
Slap, and then just slap. I'm like, yes. So there's a little more feistiness, I think, in her.
I agree with that.
Yeah,
but it's just one of those things, you know. And Katie Holmes blowing up probably would have been a lot better than Gyllenhaal.
Yeah,
no offense.
I don't think there would be much of a difference considering you didn't actually see him. Actually,
I know.
But, you know, that's beside the point, I suppose.
Yeah.
So, what have we learned? What have we learned?
Go for it.
What have we learned from Batman Begins? The world is too small for a man like Bruce Wayne to disappear.
Mm-hmm.
A vigilante is just a man lost in the search for his own gratification. Death is not considerate or friendly. We fall so we can learn to pick ourselves up. All creatures feel fear, especially the scary ones. Invisibility is simply a matter of patience and agility. You always fear what you don't understand. It's not who you are underneath, but what you do that defines you. And never go into business with someone without finding out their dirty secrets. What did we learn from The Dark Knight? What doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Strange.
When you're the Gotham DA, if you're not getting shot at, you're not doing your job right. You either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain. Criminals aren't complicated. You just have to figure out what they're after. Some men just want to watch the world burn. The night is darkest just before the dawn. And that is what we've learned from The Dark Knight. Nolan has really taken an amazing approach to what has to be my favorite superhero ever. He stays relatively true to the Batman story, but knows that it's his universe and Batman does things differently in this world. Heath Ledger's Joker was amazing and perfect for the world. I can't recommend these movies more.
Yeah, it's like I said earlier, anyone who's a fan of superhero movies definitely needs to watch these. If you were to tell me you're a superhero fan and was like, oh, I've never seen these movies, I would be like, what? But the great thing about these, especially The Dark Knight, is that you really don't have to be a superhero fan. I consider The Dark Knight to be one of the best crime dramas to come around in the last 10 years. Plus, it's pretty cool that Batman's in it, too. You know, and then it's cemented by an amazing performance by Heath Ledger that I think demands to be seen.
Oh, demands. Okay, well, I admit that I enjoyed The Dark Knight the most. Heath Ledger is awesome, although Maggie G just didn't do a darn thing for me. This is the one time I miss Katie Holmes. But Batman Begins just kind of set the stage for the rest of the films and drags a little for me. But as I mentioned.
No.
All right. So let's check out a couple things here. Right now, Batman Begins is currently 91 on our flick chart. Let's do a little more honing with the specific movie and see where it ends up being on our flick chart list. Batman Begins versus Austin Powers and Goldmember.
Oh, Batman Begins.
Yeah.
Batman Begins versus WALL-E.
Ooh. WALL-E.
Ah.
Begins. Batman WALL-E. Begins versus WALL-E. I'm going WALL-E.
WALL-E.
Batman Begins versus Armageddon.
Ooh. Armageddon's kind of a guilty pleasure of mine.
I'm an Armageddon. I do an Armageddon.
Really?
I'm
gonna do Armageddon.
Versus Batman Begins.
I'd still say Batman Begins. Batman Begins versus Superman of 1978.
Ooh, Superman.
Oh, yeah, I'm torn on this one. I'm going to say Superman.
All right. Batman Begins versus Toy Story 2. I have a feeling I know the answer to that.
I'm going to let Steven go first.
What would you say, Jeff?
I would say Batman Begins myself. Ooh. Both good movies. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. Which would you rather watch if you're given the choice?
I'd rather watch Toy Story 2 if you ask me.
Yeah, I'm going to say Toy Story 2.
See, I knew the answer.
This is why it's 91 on our list.
Batman Begins versus Heavenly Creatures.
Ooh, Batman Begins.
Yeah, Batman Begins.
Batman Begins versus Clockwork Orange.
Batman Begins.
Begins.
Totally. And it is now 69 on our flick chart.
69, dude.
So I did get up there on the list. Let's see where The Dark Knight was. Dark Knight is not on our flick chart.
What?
Let's add it to our flick chart now. The Dark Knight versus Kindergarten Cop.
Dark Knight.
Dark Knight.
Dark Knight versus Wall-E.
Wall-E.
Mm. I think I'm actually going to go Dark Knight on this one.
I agree with the Dark Knight. Wall-E, really? I mean, don't get me wrong. Both good movies. This one's a tough one for me. The Dark Knight versus The Princess Bride.
Oh.
Princess Bride.
Yeah, I'm going to go with The Princess Bride.
Yeah. I have to go with that, too. Dark Knight versus Heat.
Ooh. I don't know what he. I don't know Heat. Have we seen Heat?
Must have. Had.
Yeah, it's what, another.
Forgetting.
It's a crime drama.
Okay, I haven't seen it, so don't. Let's not do it.
I'll have to remove that from our flick chart.
Yeah.
Later. So we'll save The Dark Knight. I'd rather see that over Heat, anyways. How did these things get on our list? Dark Knight versus X2. X-Men Unlimited.
Dark Knight.
I'm going to say X2, actually.
Yeah, I'm just going to say Dark Knight. So. Dark Knight versus 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Ooh, Dark Knight. Unless I'm doing acid, then it's 2001.
Yeah, ooh. I'm going to have to say 2001 myself. Because that's a classic.
It's a classic, but it's also long and boring. Dark Knight versus Reservoir Dogs.
Ooh, Reservoir Dogs. Wow.
Yeah, really? Reservoir Dogs, yeah.
Really? Over The Dark Knight?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You guys are on crack or something, man. Dark Knight is 20 on our flick chart now.
Yeah.
Really? Reservoir Dogs over The Dark Knight?
Reservoir Dogs is a unique, independent movie.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. As I said, both good movies, but I'd rather see The Dark Knight over Reservoir Dogs. That's a no-brainer to me. Wow, my blind is suddenly blown.
Your blind is blown?
My mind is blown. In the meantime, go into the present.
When does this happen in the movie?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
The Dark Knight Rises.
Or
The Dark Knight Rises.
Take your pick. 86% fresh, 93% audience. Starring Chris, or directed by, excuse me, Christopher Nolan. Starring Christian Bale, Michael Caine, Gary Oldman, Tom Hardy, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Anne Hathaway, and Marion Cotillard. And there's a reason why I added her into this list, considering her parts, though.
Yeah.
So, The Dark Knight rose.
He did.
Although, what the hell happened to him? The first time we see Bruce, he's got a cane, and apparently he has no cartilage in his knees or something.
Correct.
Okay, so you're already starting to hone in on one of my problems with this movie. And that's called plot holes. Like, all right, I'm jumping a little ahead here, but it has completely to do with the cartilage in the knee thing. So I get, like, I can understand, I'll even go with suspension of disbelief that maybe he was so screwed up that it sort of caught up with him, you know, from all his crap, and he's in bad shape. So we see him strap some sort of robotic knee brace on.
Right.
Which makes him all better. But then he didn't have that robotic knee brace when he was jumping to save himself from the prison. Right?
Right. And he didn't have any trouble walking around after that. Although they did do something about his back, but I think that was after Bane broke the bat.
Yeah.
And basically, only quick note on this. I really felt that this was a combination storyline of the Nolanverse version of Nightfall and No Man's Land, which are two completely separate stories in the old canon verse before the pre-New 52 universe. And the Nightfall saga introduced had a new Batman, which was Jean-Paul Valley, who was going psycho and created this, what's referred to as Azbats, because Jean-Paul Valley was Azrael, so Azbats. And then Batman had to come reclaim his mantle.
Like as backwards. Just kidding. That's what I was thinking.
And then Bruce, after going through a recovery period, had to come back, take back his mantle, and then take care of Bane. Actually, no, Azbats actually took care of Bane before he came back, but still. Okay. Completely different storyline, but also doing the No Man's Land storyline. But that was because of a cataclysmic earthquake that practically destroyed all of Gotham. And it looked like it was too much that we could handle to really recover from it. So the United States just decided, we're just going to call that No Man's Land. It's not worth doing anything for it. So after such and such a time, nobody in, nobody out. And essentially, right. That's what happened here, except a different type of scenario. So nice little link to the history of Batman.
Previous world.
I'm sure all the comic book fans were fapping in their seats. So I had a problem with the whole leg brace thing, which I thought was a little weird that they were sort of like, oh, you need this, and oh, no, he doesn't need it, and... There's other couple things, like how the heck did he manage to get back to Gotham City from the Middle East in like a day?
Planes.
He's Bruce Wayne.
He's Bruce Wayne, you know, without any money or whatever. And then he manages to walk across a river that nobody else seems to be able to walk across and lay a giant trail of gasoline. I also did like the fact that how long were the cops supposedly trapped underground?
A couple days.
Oh, I know. Yeah, it was a couple days.
But they were still getting food and water.
Yeah, I think it was longer than a couple days. But yeah, they were, you know, they had food and water, and it looked like they apparently had shaving cream and razors. And
I know.
You know. Yeah. And it was really nice of of Lucius and the guys at Wayne Tech to build a countdown timer into the nuclear reactor.
Oh, that was convenient.
But all that aside, you know.
How would you know it was going to blow up otherwise?
I guess.
For visual.
Well, and how do you think Bane set a timer?
Yeah. And then, of course, we sort of hinted at the beginning of the show. My other sort of thing is I've always had a slight issue with Batman's voice. Like,
really?
But he doesn't talk enough really for it to be that annoying most of the time. It seemed like he talked a lot in this and it was really annoying. And then we have to counter that with Bane's voice, which makes it sound like he's speaking at the bottom of a well. With a really weird sort of English accent that makes him sound like 40 years older than he is.
And it also sounded like it was RDR. Basically, it was recorded as... It was almost as if his mask included essentially a megaphone. Okay. But it also sounded like the audio that was spoken was recorded somewhere else.
Right. And actually, I mean, I was sort of annoyed by it, but I got more annoyed by it after I watched Batman Begins, because at the end when Raz has the gas mask on, he has a scene where he's talking and he sounds perfectly fine. And I'm like, why couldn't Bane sound like that in the other movie? I'm like, why does he have to sound all goofy?
It's a different type of mask.
Yeah, it looks almost the same, actually. It's without the stuff that wraps around his head. But yeah, so I thought that was funny. I immediately sort of latched onto that today when I watched it. I'm like, he sounds perfectly understandable. Because my problem with Bane was if he was only saying a couple words, I had a hard time understanding what he was saying. He had to speak like a sentence because it took like two or three words for my brain to start to decode the reverb. So when he would just say, like, huh, I'd be like, wait, what did he say? Did he say no or did he say stop? What did he say? You know, it was like, ugh, it was so annoying. And then maybe this was just my theater experience that I had, but both me and my friend who I saw it with both had an issue with the soundtrack. And it just never, that chant just like never stops.
Yeah.
And it was really loud and it made it even harder to hear what people were saying. I'm like, they really need to turn that down in the mix.
There were a lot of people who had complaints about the sound because of that reason. Yeah. And I mean, somebody, I remember one of the critics like totally blasted Hans Zimmer, mm-hmm. you know, saying that it was just too throbbing and not,
it was, you know, exhausting.
Natural. Yeah.
You know, yeah, it was like, we just noticed, we're like, man, that soundtrack just never, there's like no moment ever of quiet in that movie. It's just constantly going, you know.
Oh, I was fine by it.
Yeah.
There was a couple of times where I thought there was some sort of audio issues, at least during my showing. I can't remember what scene it was in, but then everything got better. I think it was just the initial fight with between Batman and Bane. Mm-hmm. There was like the audio just changed. Like, I don't know exactly how to describe how it did, but it didn't sound right. Mm. But whenever Bane speak, it sounded perfectly fine because it was recorded somewhere else.
Yeah.
Right.
Adding it in post. And it was poorly edited.
Well, I think I remember we had a news item about people complaining when he showed
the first 6 minutes.
Yeah, that people were like, I can't understand what he's saying at all. So, I mean, I perfectly expected them to go back and sort of try to fix that.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they made it better or worse.
Well, I read an article that that Tom Hardy basically just said, like, he's not worried about the comments that people had to say about it because he's just like, I trust Nolan.
Right.
You know, and so whatever Nolan does is what Nolan does, basically. Mm-hmm. So he was kind of just telling people, like, lay off it, you know, and which I thought was interesting.
Right.
But that's, you know, but he agreed that, you know, there were people who were writing things like that were really rude.
Oh,
sure. You know, that he sounded retarded and, you know, and yeah, it sounded like,
sounded I'm just saying that, just hard to listen.
Yeah. People were tweeting things like Bane sounded like he had, you know, Down syndrome and stuff like that. And he was reacting to those comments in this article. And I agree. I mean, it's just, that's just how people were.
I just kept imagining him as a really angry buff Captain Picard, and I was okay with it.
Yeah.
But
I was just mad the mask covered up so much of his face.
Well, I mean, as an actor, you've got to be kind of not freaked out by that. But I mean, basically, you've lost a lot of the ability to sort of emote. He's got to do everything basically with his eyes.
Eyes and body. Yep.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, while I did like the design, I think the whole he couldn't breathe without the mask on was not right. I would have preferred to have the classic Venom enhanced physical monster sort of thing.
I didn't get that he couldn't breathe without it. To me, what was explained to me was that he was in pain and that it delivered like a painkiller. Without it, he was in intensive pain. Which was
in one of the painkiller?
Something like that. It was in the trivia for the movie. There's that whole thing. I don't think it was helped by the fact that Bane's theme was that chant.
Right.
You know, so you've got sort of like that background of people basically talking. So whenever you have people sort of talking over other people talking, your brain has to decode even more, like to separate it.
Mm-hmm.
So it just gets all confusing sometimes. And it was just like, okay, I'm hoping maybe on the Blu-ray that they'll have like an alternate soundtrack where you can just like have that without all the reverb.
I'm going to shut off the chants now. Click.
Yeah. Or not even just his voice. They could take that track, and just redo it without all that effects and clean it up and put it back on there and be like, here, here's a branching soundtrack if you want. You can have it pop up as a question as you're watching it. Do you have a hard time understanding him? Click yes or no. You click yes, and it just cleans it right up.
That would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we've led into a lot of this, you know, talking about this movie. What did you guys think about the ending?
I thought it was okay. I thought I liked how he finally came to terms with that he needed to pass the torch.
Mm-hmm.
I did like that. I didn't see what happened with, you know, I didn't see what really happened coming.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because I just didn't know the storyline or whatever. But I thought it was weird seeing Liam Neeson kind of pop in there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I was like, wow.
Well, I was I had seen him on the IMDb listing, so I kind of knew he was going to be in it. But we were just kind of like, how is he going to be in it? He's supposed to be dead.
You figured know. It would be a flashback, like everything.
Right. And it was.
Right, exactly.
Well, which also kind of pulled out one of the surprises in the movie, spoiler alert. His daughter Talia is in the movie, and she was in the movie frequently before we even find out she was Talia,
right,
as Miranda Tate. And she was the one who was supposed to take over the the project for the nuclear reactor. And then Bane comes in and steals, and then, yeah. So I was actually... that I almost giggled at that point when it's like, it's Talia, what, huh?
So yeah, I had no idea that he even had a daughter, so color me surprised
again, nerd.
Yeah, that's fine. No, that's cool. The thing I would have done differently with the ending, the only thing I would have changed, I would have ended the movie when you see Michael Caine at the table drinking the Fernet.
Yeah.
And he sort of stops and looks and smiles.
Right.
I would have ended it right there.
Not even
I would have not shown Bruce Joseph Wayne Gordon. Sitting at the other table. I would have just ended it. You could have done all the stuff with, you know, just Gordon Levitt and the whole Robin thing. That I'm fine with that. I just would have never shown Bruce Wayne again. I would have left it as sort of like, you know, why is he smiling? Is he smiling because he's actually... I actually thought for a second that it was much like seeing Ra's al Ghul again, that he wasn't really sitting at that table. Like, it was like, you know, him wishing that he was seeing him at the table. But I think that would have been better served, like, if he would have done basically what I call the Inception ending, which is like, did he see him or did he not see him? Why was he smiling? You know what I mean?
Everybody freak out because of it or something.
Well, it sets it up for...
I'm having short-term memory loss, I think.
Yeah. Why is that?
Because I think I'm remembering the ending with Robin and all that stuff. But I'm not... I don't know why I'm not remembering. I'm not remembering what you're talking about. I remember the Peter Caine.
Michael Caine?
Or Michael Caine, sorry. I remember the Michael Caine... thing, but I'm not.
Remember, he told him that every year while he was gone, that he would go to vacation. He would go to Paris, and he would go to the same place every year and order a Fernet Branca. Which, by the way, has anybody ever had Fernet Branca?
No.
It tastes like dirt. It's really expensive, and it tastes like dirt. So of course it's French. so. So yeah, he told him that he saw him every year. So they sort of set that up.
Got it.
He's going to go see. And then at the end, you see him go to the same, you know,
place where he gets
to the place where he gets his drink, and he gets his drink and he picks it up and he looks over and then he just sort of smiles. And then they cut and they show Bruce Wayne and Selina Kyle sitting at the other table.
Right, right. Okay, oh, yes,
I don't remember that it was Selina sitting there.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I thought we just saw the back of a head. We didn't see who it was.
No. They were at the next table over.
Uh-huh.
They weren't sitting at the same table with him. Okay, right. I remember. Got it.
So, got it. Yeah, that's how I would have changed it. I would have just had him smile and then cut. Done. So... I thought that would have been an awesome ending. But with that being said, because we do know, well, obviously, I don't think we're going to see this particular incarnation of Bruce Wayne, but we've set up the whole thing with Robin getting the
Nightwing.
Whatever his name is.
Yeah.
And ending up in the Batcave. So are we going to see a sequel? And do we think it's going to try to set itself in the same Nolanverse?
I don't think so.
No?
No, I don't think it would fly without Christopher Nolan. I mean, we've seen Nightwing cartoons, you know, and we've seen Batman Beyond cartoon and all that stuff, but... I don't know that the films or I don't know that anybody is going to pick that up.
Right.
Maybe at least not for a while.
Yeah.
Batman's probably
just going to get a reboot and we're not going to see anything. It would be kind of cool. And who knows, maybe it's more of passing the mantle because, you know, Dick Grayson was Batman for a while.
Right.
So it could be that Blake is going to actually just be the new Batman.
Right.
And it will be interesting to see if they bring him into the Justice League movie they're coming up with.
Yeah, that's probably unlikely, but we'll have to see. And because right now the Justice League, that's like 5 years off. I can't see that happening anytime soon right now. They'll probably have to reboot Batman again. Just as long as I really, really just want them to go and be, here's the new look, feel of the world, but this is not an origin story for Batman because we've already had one. In fact, you know, Batman, the Tim Burton Batman didn't really have an origin story. It was almost like year one.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had the flashbacks about why he did what he did. But so we've had our origin story and everything. It's just about starting off in a new look feel of the Batman verse.
And let me say, I think in this movie, I think Joseph Gordon-Levitt did an awesome job. I thought he was sort of the standout.
He fit in very well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He did fit in very well. Well, okay, critically, this is where it's interesting. On the critical side, really all people really positively said about it was that about the production value and how it looked.
Okay.
That was really the big positives. You know, and that basically that Nolan knew what he was doing when it came to the visuals and the production value, and he delivered on that. Mm-hmm. Majority of the people also tended to like the ending as far as the critics go. Vast majority did. And they felt that it was a good ending to the story.
Right.
Which I thought was interesting. Negatively, they had a ton of different things to say about it, but overall it seemed like the most typical comment was they found it just to being very clunky, and that it was pretty much an ordeal to sit through. And of course they really, really destroyed the dialogue. Especially with Batman and I'm Bone, you know, like all that stuff. They really
can I do this, or do I look like a gay superhero?
Right, exactly. But they destroyed that. And they just said that the characters didn't seem to natural. Like everybody was trying to force the character in this movie versus just be the character.
Right.
And one of the other things that was fairly consistent was people just felt like it was too stretched out, and really just because every memory had to be shown in flashback. Right. Or every recollection had to be shown in flashback. And hell, how many times did we see the little girl climb the wall?
Right.
Ugh. You know, like how many times do we got to see the same thing over and over again?
Right.
You know, and I think that that's what I, so I would agree with that. But as a whole, I think that people felt that Nolan just either just tanked this one or dialed it in. But they couldn't make up their mind about whether it was one or the other. But it was kind of like he either tried to make it so epic that it just didn't work. Right. Or that whether he just was like, I got to finish this third movie. Just put it in the can.
Right.
You know, so I'm done. So it was unfortunately on the negative side for the most part. But the positives were pretty consistent.
Yeah. But it wasn't about...
The acting. Yeah, but it wasn't like, ooh, the acting was great. The this was great. The plot was great. No, it was like, it looked great.
And it was a nice end to the,
yeah,
the story.
It was, he had a great personality.
Right.
So, yeah. That's
so what did we learn from The Dark Knight Rises? We have learned detectives are not allowed to believe in coincidences. People don't pay attention to you until you put on a mask. Hope is really the key to torture. And a hero can be anyone. That is what we've learned from The Dark Knight Rises. I have to say, I was right. This movie did not pull out the amazing awesomeness that The Avengers did, and I don't expect it to perform as well in the box office still. It still was an incredible ending to the Nolan Batman storyline. Hey, I think the critics agreed with me on that one. But this was still a movie I could have waited for and just suffered from a pre-release lack of enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. I think it's definitely worth seeing in the theaters, but I wouldn't say it's much of a rush to go see it. So if you miss it in the theaters, no harm done. You can see it on DVD. You'll be fine.
Yeah, or if you're scared to go to the theater. A good, strong finish, I think, to the trilogy. Again, not my favorite of the three. To me, this is very much my Return of the Jedi of the series for me, which is, like, not my favorite of the original Star Wars. But instead, it sort of swaps, like, the annoying Ewoks of Return of the Jedi for annoying voice performances and plot holes. Like, but obviously, it's a must-see if you're a fan of the other two. I mean, why not?
Right. You know. Insert the insert the Ewok scream.
Yep.
I was thinking of the Wilhelm scream of the Ewok. Whatever. Anywho, definitely not my favorite, except for Tom Hardy, of course. But just didn't have the same punch as the others and seemed like it was just there to wrap up the story and that's about it. It was pretty though, and I actually liked that they did bring in the stuff from the previous movie, so it actually did feel more like a complete saga rather than just three standalone films. So I didn't mind that so much.
Yeah, so that's one thing I wanted to mention is Tom Hardy, shirtless, bald headed. I almost wanted him to take off the mask so we could see more of him, but anyways. Moving into the future.
Hi. Welcome to the future. And I'm telling you, it's great here.
The Expendables 2, directed by Simon West, starring Sylvester Stallone, Jason Statham, Bruce Willis, Liam Hemsworth, and Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jean-Claude Van Damme, Jet Li, Chuck Norris, Dolph Lundgren, and Randy Couture. Released in August 12th, 2012. After taking a seemingly simple job for Miss Church, That's Bruce Willis. The Expendables find their plans going awry, and one of their own is brutally murdered by rival mercenary Jean Villain, or Jean-Claude Van Damme. Mm-hmm. The Expendables set out into hostile territory where their new members, Bill the Kid, Liam Hemsworth, and Maggie Yu Lam, to put up a stop to a deadly weapon and gain their revenge over the people who killed their brothers in arms. We didn't even know who died.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. All I'm going to say is you guys got a lot to say about this movie. I'm pulling to Jeff and be like, you know what? I don't have a whole lot to say.
I think I said it in the talking points.
Yeah. Why are we reviewing this? Did we not destroy the first film? So, our excitement for the film. Hey, it's Expendables again. I would love to see this on Netflix streaming.
Yeah, I just say move along. Nothing to see here.
Yeah, mine is just slept through the first one. I imagine it'd be more of the same.
That is probably our shortest feature.
Just nothing was particularly grabby of this one. So. Yeah.
But coming to attractions, I feel that next week we'll probably have more to say about the future. But in the past, we'll be talking about Attack the Block. In the present, we'll be taking a look at The Watch, you bastard. it's just The Watch, you bastard, was another side comment. And then the future, Looper.
Yep.
Plenty of ways to contact us. Pop over to our website, colmovies.com. Follow us on or shoot us an email at colmovies@gmail.com. Please tell us what you think. We really do want to know what you think about these movies. If you have anything about what we said, should we actually have talked about The Expendables too? Leave us a voicemail at 361-265-8255.
It was an expendable trailer.
361-COL-TALK. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/COL movies, Facebook at facebook.com/COL movies, Google Plus at g+.2/COL movies. Please pop over to iTunes, leave us a 5-star review. We'd appreciate it very much, and I will read your review on the show no matter what you put in there.
Yep.
Final thoughts.
I would say just let's hope there's justice in the Colorado situation.
Mm. Oh, yeah, we forgot to mention that.
Yeah, in general. Ridiculous.
At the Alamo, they actually had, like, right before they started the movie, they literally said, a moment of silence for the people in Aurora, Colorado.
Oh, wow, cool.
They literally had, like, 30 seconds of a blank screen. Well, it had an Alamo Drafthouse logo watermarked on it. But it was just a blank screen, complete silence, and everybody in the theater completely silent.
Yeah.
And so it was a nice little thing, and then it did the wavy thing into the Warner Brothers logo. So it was nice.
Yeah, the only thing I would say is if you're gonna go and do a Dark Knight-a-thon, remember, well, I'm sure these people aren't listening to the podcast, but remember that you're going there for like 9 hours.
Yes.
So that means you're without your phone for 9 hours. If you're going to pay the money to go see it and you don't want to be in there because you want to be on your phone or you want to be doing other things, then go to the lobby.
Right.
Stupid ass. Is. 'Cause there were several. And I'm like, dude, you paid $25 to be in this marathon. Like, don't go if you're not going to pay attention to the movie for 9 hours.
Agreed.
Okay. For that, for me, for Fuzz, for Steven. Take care, everyone.
Hasta la vista, baby.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
That'll do, too.
That's the worst combat I've ever heard. And you stole it from a movie.
looking at you, kid.
End of line.